Governor Jerry Brown continues to receive criticism for excluding agriculture in his mandatory water restrictions. All of California's Senate Democrats recently sent the governor a letter saying he must pressure farmers to use water more efficiently. It is now being widely reported that agriculture uses 80% of the state's water. 55% of that water goes to the meat and dairy industries. On today's Your Call, we continue our week-long series on California's water crisis by talking about agriculture. What would limits on agriculture actually look like? And what about a sustainable model? Join us after the news.
BBC News with David Austin. France's National Assembly has voted by a big majority to back new intelligence-gathering measures designed to catch potential Islamist terrorists. Under the new legislation, officials will be fully authorised to monitor internet metadata, or the details of the place and time of interactions, before investigating suspicious individual content. A new government watchdog will have broad powers to intervene in cases of alleged abuse. Hugh Schofield reports from Paris.
All speakers in the debate recognise that France faces an exceptional threat from terrorism at this time. For the government, backed by the opposition UMP, that means that the intelligence agencies need to be given a proper legal framework in which to act. But opponents say that precisely because the threat to France is so acute, it's wrong to legislate in haste. And they say what the January attacks in Paris showed was not a lack of surveillance en masse, rather the need for better targeted intelligence of individuals.
The Burundian opposition leader Agathon Rwasa has denounced a court decision to allow President Pierre Nkurunziza to run for a third term. There have been further violent protests in the capital, Bujumbura, with police firing tear gas and live ammunition. Mr. Rwasa said the country's constitution was at risk.
What has been pronounced by the court is a putsch against the constitution. A putsch because they are all aware that nobody is allowed to run more than two terms. And no one is allowed to run more than 10 years as president of the Republic of Burundi.
The vice president of the Constitutional Court fled the country ahead of the ruling, saying he faced intense pressure, including death threats, to approve the move. A presidential spokesman said nobody threatened the judge. The aid group Save the Children says up to 40 migrants drowned when their rubber dinghy, crowded with nearly 140 people, deflated in the Mediterranean. A container ship came to the rescue on Sunday. Video shot from the vessel shows desperate African migrants jumping for lifebuoys or trying to cling to ropes. One of those rescued, a migrant from Senegal, Astoy Faldia, described what she saw.
It was a little boat. It fell and exploded. Boom. There was a big ship there and they threw down ropes. Someone grabbed onto the rope. All the other people started pushing to try to save themselves, but then people started falling in the water.
The Italian Coast Guard said it could not confirm the number of dead. The European Union's competition commissioner says she's examining allegations that the American fast food giant McDonald's avoided paying around $1 billion of tax in Europe. Unions have claimed McDonald's reduced its tax burden by channeling over $4 billion of revenues into a subsidiary. McDonald's has rejected the allegations. World News from the BBC. Saudi artillery units and Houthi rebel fighters have exchanged fire across the border between Yemen and Saudi Arabia. Saudi television showed pictures of damaged cars and buildings in the town of Najran. Yemeni tribal leaders say two Saudis were killed in the shelling, but there's been no independent verification. The US Secretary of State John Kerry has said that conditions in Somalia are improving. Speaking in Mogadishu, Mr. Kerry said that 20 years after American troops withdrew from the country, after a humanitarian mission ended in bloodshed, the United States wanted to show its support for Somalia in its battle against Islamic extremists. During the first ever visit by a US Secretary of State, Mr. Kerry met the Somali president, Hassan Sheikh Mohammed. The US has supported the government in its war against al-Shabaab. Britain's main party leaders have begun their final tours of the country in an effort to win over undecided voters before Thursday's general election. Here's our political correspondent, Rob Watson.
The leaders of the Conservative, Labour and Liberal Democrat parties have spread out across the country to encourage the faithful to vote and persuade the undecided to come over to their cause. David Cameron is continuing with his core message that the country is on the right track, while the leader of the opposition Labour Party, Ed Miliband, is warning of savage spending cuts if the Conservatives are re-elected. Barring dramatic change between now and Thursday, it seems unlikely either man will win a majority, a result that will trigger an intense and potentially very difficult period of negotiations among the parties as to who could form a stable new government.
Rob Watson. Queen Elizabeth has met her great-granddaughter for the first time. Princess Charlotte, who's just 3 days old and is the fourth in line to the throne, was introduced to her great-grandmother at Kensington Palace. And those are the latest stories from BBC News.
Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. All of California's Democratic state senators recently sent California Governor Jerry Brown a letter urging him to pressure farmers to use water more efficiently. The letter says, quote, agriculture uses much of the water in the state. It can and should do more during the drought, end quote. California's historic drought has shined a light on agriculture. Just about every story focusing on the drought includes the fact that agriculture uses 80% of the state's water. 55% of that water goes to the meat and dairy industries, according to the Factory Farm Coalition. Individuals use about 4% of the state's water. Governor Brown's recent executive order mandates a 25% reduction in urban water use across the state, but it leaves out the state's agriculture sector. California is home to over 250 different crops, including water-intensive and lucrative crops like alfalfa, almonds, and pistachios. California is also home to almost 2 million dairy cows. According to the Factory Farm Awareness Coalition, you can save the same amount of water by skipping 1 gallon of milk or 27 showers. Mother Jones crunched the numbers and found that it takes 683 gallons of water to produce 1 gallon of milk. So on today's Your Call, we continue our week-long series on the drought and California's water crisis by talking about agriculture. How should the state address the water-intensive agriculture practices and sector, and what would sustainable agriculture look like? Why is the ag sector largely exempted from Governor Brown's water conservation agenda? Joining us today is Heather Cooley, director of the Pacific Institute's Water Program, where she oversees research on a variety of water issues. And Heather joins us from Oakland. Hi, Heather. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Nice to have you. We're also joined by Professor Samuel Sandoval Solis, assistant in the Department of Land, Air, and Water Resources at UC Davis. And Professor Solis joins us from his office in Davis. Hi, Professor Solis. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. And we're joined by Daniel Beard. He's a former commissioner of the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation and author of Deadbeat Dams, Why We Should Abolish the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation and Tear Down Glen Canyon Dam. Daniel has a new piece in Bloomberg called How to Save California Agriculture from Itself. Hi, Daniel. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. If you could call me Dan, I'd appreciate it.
All right. Hi, Dan. Thank you for joining us. So I want to ask you all the question that we addressed when we did a show during our last series, and that is, what if we ate as if water mattered? And we all talked about why the governor is not talking really that much about agriculture. Yesterday, Adam Scow with Food and Water Watch said that he's too close to agriculture and most politicians get money from this sector. But let's start with you, Heather. Why do you think ag isn't getting more attention from Governor Brown?
Well, I think there's a couple of things to touch on. First is there are some things that were in the governor's executive order that were for agriculture, and specifically there were some reporting requirements, which doesn't sound like a lot, but we don't have good data about how much water agriculture uses, and that's a critical piece in managing water in California, is really having data and knowing how much is being used and where it's being used. But there are other channels in which agriculture is being impacted by the drought. In particular, there are allocations from the major water delivery systems in California, the Central Valley Project and the State Water Project. And both of those projects have cut allocations to agriculture this year. And again, that's a separate process than what's done through the governor's executive order. In addition, there are curtailments, water rights curtailments, that are happening on California rivers, not on all of them, but on some of them. These are we haven't seen these types of curtailments since the late 70s, when we also experienced a severe drought. So those are also creating cutbacks on agriculture.
Heather, you mentioned numbers, and we've done so many shows on this that it's really difficult to get the numbers. But the Pacific Institute has done a study looking at individual use versus agriculture. And as I said in the intro, this is getting a lot of media attention. Individuals are using about 4% of the state's water, and agriculture uses 80%. So those numbers we do know for sure, right?
Well, we know that if we look at how much water humans use in California, we know that agriculture uses 80%, and then our urban areas account for the other 20%. So, you know, agriculture uses about four times as much as we do in our urban areas. That doesn't necessarily imply that it's wasteful. I think that's a separate conversation. Growing food does require water. If we look globally, about 70% of water use globally is for agriculture. So California isn't that far off the global average. I do, though, you know, note that there is tremendous potential in California to be using water more efficiently within the agricultural sector. And that's an important part of this conversation.
Yes, and we'll definitely talk about that. But first, Professor Solis, what's your take on this? Why do you think, at a time when all of California's Democratic state senators are urging the governor to pressure farmers to use water more efficiently, he's not really talking about agriculture?
I think what Heather mentioned before, it's correct in terms of there has already been cutbacks for the major irrigation districts, for the major agricultural irrigation districts. So that's correct. Basically, what happened there is that I think there are already cutbacks. So pretty much last year they have 0% to 10% allocation of their surface water right. This year is in about the same amount. So while the governor is just asking 25%. For municipal urban uses, I think the agriculture already has put their fair share in their cutbacks. And also there is another legislation that he passed last year, which is the SGMA, Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, that will also affect and constrain the water use in agriculture.
And Dan, Governor Brown was asked about agriculture on the PBS NewsHour when he signed the executive order. And Hari Srinivasan says, we know that it costs an enormous amount of water to have a single almond to eat or the fracking industry. Is it time to start zeroing in on the largest customers or users of water? And the governor said, quote, well, then you're putting government in a role of picking and choosing, maybe almonds instead of walnuts or tomatoes instead of rice. I mean, that is a big brother that outside a war or some absolute unprecedented catastrophe shouldn't even be considered, end quote. I mean, that was the first time that I've heard him pointedly asked about agriculture. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I can give you a one-word comment about why he didn't include agriculture in his executive order, and that word is politics. The ag sector in California, with respect to water, has controlled water for a long time, since the very beginning. I just think the governor didn't want to take on that political fight. I think he underestimated the reaction from people to his executive order, and I think I was disappointed that he didn't include agriculture. I really want to comment on a couple of things that were said. I think it's important to understand that in a drought condition, every time we've done a study of this, we've found that farm incomes go up. They don't go down. They go up. And they go up because usually prices rise, and also there are payments that come from government sources, which are added to income. So, you know, yes, the federal project is going to cut back, but that hasn't stopped the agricultural sector from expanding their use of groundwater. It doesn't, and it also hasn't prevented them from applying for and receiving payments from other government programs. So I think the ag sector has done a great job of managing the PR on this whole affair, trying to paint themselves as a user of less water than the environment, for example, which is one of the things that they did
a couple of weeks ago, and now they're trying to paint themselves in another light that they're going to that their income will be impacted, and I just don't think people ought to believe it.
Dan, we did a show yesterday about the power brokers and the politics behind water. You know, who has the most influence in Sacramento? When we're talking about agriculture, can you give us some names?
Yeah, the Westlands Water District. I think, you know, the federal government has the reclamation program in the federal government has been in existence for over 100 years. And half of that program is in California. And a majority of the influence on that program comes from the Westlands Water District. And there are 600 farming operations in Westlands. And they have controlled not only water in California and the politics of water in California, but also nationally with the reclamation program itself. So I just think that people understand who the power brokers are, and Governor Brown understands that as well. I mean, he's tap dancing gracefully at the present time, trying to get around this issue and hoping that it'll go away. But I don't think that it will.
What do you explain that? Because how do you explain that? Because he's not running for office again.
Yeah, I've often wondered that. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Heather, do you have any insights on this? I mean, again, at a time when his fellow Democrats are urging him to pressure farmers, and by farmers, I'm guessing they mean big ag, because we definitely want to make that distinction between the small farmers mm-hmm. and the corporate farms. Mm-hmm. But how do you explain this?
Well, I think that's a good question, and I don't think anybody knows the answer to that. I do want to point out a couple of things, which I think will have considerable impacts on agriculture, and that was the groundwater legislation that was passed last year that the governor signed. Up until now, groundwater has not been regulated in most parts of the state, and groundwater, of course, is a major source of water in average years, but certainly in drought years. And what we've seen is as there have been cuts on surface water in streams and rivers because of the drought, we see much increase in groundwater pumping. And that has led to subsidence. It has led to damage to infrastructure. It's a major problem. And because of that, because of this drought, there have been calls, frankly, for decades to try to solve this issue. There hasn't been much progress, but because of the drought, and there was an effort and a successful effort in passing legislation to regulate groundwater, that is going to have a major impact on California agriculture. It'll have an impact on what we grow and how we grow it. And, you know, this will be implemented over time, and certainly you could argue that we need to accelerate the implementation of the Groundwater Management Act, but that is going to have a tremendous impact on agriculture in California and will move us towards a much more sustainable water future for the state.
What kind of impact? Can you be more specific?
Well, we are overdrafting groundwater, and overdraft means we're taking more out than is replenished on over the long term. And as I mentioned, this has been a problem for a decade, but we've seen tremendous drops in response to this drought and in the much milder drought we had just a couple of years ago. So what the legislation calls for is that these groundwater basins get into a more sustainable balance. So that means that the amount that can be withdrawn will have to be equivalent to the amount that's naturally recharged over time. And so what we're going to have to do, particularly in those overdrafted basins, is to reduce withdrawals. And agriculture is a major source of withdrawals. They will have to be faced in a future with much less water than they have now. And that, again, will change how we're growing, what we're growing, and where we're growing food.
And Dan, how do you think this will affect subsidies? Because in your piece, How to Save California Agriculture from Itself, you point out that by one estimate, the yearly water subsidy to Westlands, again, this is the Westlands Water District in the southwest corner of the Central Valley, about 600 farms make up this district, they receive about $110 million. So how will the groundwater new rules affect these subsidies?
Well, I think I don't want to be too Pollyannish about these groundwater management rules. The legislation was passed, and that was a great accomplishment, and the legislature and governor to be congratulated for passing that legislation. It's long, long overdue. It should have come 50 years ago. However, what I want to point out is there is going to be a bruising battle that will take place over the next few years about implementation of this law. And if history is any guide, the ag industry, big agriculture in California, will do everything that it can to undercut enforcement and implementation of the law. So I agree with Heather. I think she's done remarkable work over the years pointing out the problems that exist in California's water world, if you will. And I agree that the groundwater legislation is long overdue and ought to be implemented and it ought to be strong. But I'm also a politically realistic and understand that Big Ag is going to do everything they can to undercut this law. And so this is going to be a fight that's going to come in the next few years. And I think people need to be on guard. The most important thing that we can do is we can raise the price of water in any way that we can. Either if once water is priced at a realistic rate, both for agriculture and for municipal and industrial water users, we will begin to manage water more intelligently. As long as water is basically free or given away at highly subsidized rates, we aren't going to have effective management regimes. So I think the most important thing that we should be doing is take advantage of the current drought and eliminate subsidies wherever we see them to try to raise the price of water so that politicians at all levels begin to understand that water shouldn't be a free good or a free commodity.
How do you determine where to price it, and what would that process look like?
Well, there's a market out there for water right now, and the market is pretty strong. And yet, you know, we're delivering water when we have water to deliver. We're delivering it at, you know, $20 or $40 an acre foot, and the market is $700 or $1,000 an acre foot. Well, the difference between those two is the level of the subsidy, and that subsidy is being picked up by the taxpayer, by the taxpayers, and that's what I find so objectionable, is that the taxpayers ought to be held harmless in this. We ought to price water at least somewhere close to its realistic levels. And that, Heather's right, it'll have a dramatic impact on crop mix and on use of water, but it'll also have a dramatic impact on the use of water as a resource in manufacturing processes as well as in agriculture.
Dan Beard was commissioner of the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation in the first Clinton administration, and he's author of the book Deadbeat Dams, Why We Should Abolish the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation and Tear Down Glen Canyon Dam. Daniel, what is the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation?
Well, it was created 100 years ago to help settle the West, and it was created because there was no residual of engineering talent and expertise in the nation, and it built water projects across the West, Shasta Dam, Hoover Dam, and a lot of other dams across the West to deliver subsidized water to primarily to agriculture across the West to try to help promote settlement and economic development of the Western United States. And the reality is that they've succeeded in their job. You know, high fives and a fist bump. They've succeeded. And now, the reason I wrote the book and call for the elimination of the Bureau is I don't think we need them anymore. I think state and local governments can effectively manage their water much more intelligently and effectively than the federal government can.
Dan is also out with a piece for Bloomberg called How to Save California Agriculture from Itself. You can find his story at yourcallradio.org. We're also joined by Heather Cooley, director of the Pacific Institute's Water Program, and Professor Samuel Sandoval Solis, assistant in the Department of Land, Air, and Water Resources at UC Davis. On today's Your Call, we continue our week-long series on California's water crisis by talking about agriculture. Ag uses 80% of the state's water, but was mostly missing from Governor Brown's recent executive order mandating a 25% reduction in urban water use across the state. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. What are your thoughts on agriculture? This issue is now getting so much media attention. What changes do you think we need to see? Dan says, first of all, we need to price water higher. What are your thoughts? What would you add to that? And if you work in this industry, we'd love to hear from you. We also want to make a distinction between the corporate farms and the small farms. We did that yesterday when we were talking about almonds, and that distinction is not made as much as it should in many articles. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. So Professor Solis, Dan was talking about raising the price of water. What other changes would you like to see?
So you know, I mean, and even in that part of raising the price of water, I mean, I know that most of the times, if you think of the large scale, how much a farmer invests in all the things, labor, and all the products that they need compared to water, water usually goes from 3 to 5% of their investment. So even if you increase it for what he was saying, sometimes $150 to $200, $300, sometimes it will not make the difference, because for them, water is insurance, the insurance to grow whatever crop they want. So this is not that it's a bad policy. It will be a good policy, and they will receive the message. The other one, but it's not the only solution. They have also been increasing their irrigation efficiency, and with that, it have come an unintended a consequence, which is when they used to have this flood irrigation or sprinkler irrigations, some of that excess water used to recharge the ground, and later they were able to take it back from the aquifers. That moving to drip irrigation, more efficient systems, as they have done in the last 10, 15 years, they have reduced that recharge. So what are some of the other solutions that you're mentioning? How should we manage with this a more conjunctive use or intentional recharge of groundwater? So basically during periods of wet seasons or during wet years, bring all that water, divert it, and recharge the ground. That's one way. The other one is with the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, which is balancing the checkbooks. You need the water that you're using from surface water, from rivers and the snow and from the ground. It should match up the amount of water that you're using in your crops. And that's kind of why this piece of Groundwater Management Act of Governor Brown last year is very important. And the other one is using non-common, non-usual water sources, recycled water. That has been very successful in the central coast of California. So there is the point here is that it's not an individual solution or a single policy solution. It's a combination of many.
Well, and also, can you talk about the differences between small farms and corporate farms and how they use water?
Yeah, so basically, I mean, in both of their cases, they are trying to adjust to all the resources that they have available. Some of them, large farm industries can scale up and down. Well, they've been scaling up, but in any case, when their checkbook, the water that they are using is more than they have available, they will scale down. And that, I mean, it will reduce their operations, but on the overall, they are large enough to adapt to these kind of changes. Small farmers, they are now balancing on that part of pretty much surviving with the resources and that they have in terms of water, in terms of land. Having to scale back for them, it will be difficult.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, but I'd love to hear Heather and Dan also comment on this, the differences between the small farmers and the corporate farmers and how they use water in the state. Today, we are continuing our week-long series on California's water crisis and the drought. Recently, all of California's Democratic state senators sent a letter to California Governor Jerry Brown urging him to pressure farmers to use water more efficiently. The letter says agriculture uses much of the water in the state. It can and should do more during the drought. A lot of people are scratching their heads saying Governor Brown is not running for re-election, so why isn't he spending more time focusing on agriculture? When he was asked by the NewsHour, he said, "We can't be Big Brother and tell people to eat a tomato or rice." So what explains that, and what questions do you have about agriculture? What changes would you like to see? This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on Local Public Radio. If you'd like to join us on today's program, perhaps you have a perspective that you've not yet heard in this discussion, or a question you feel needs to be answered, we invite you to join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. It is a toll-free call. If you'd rather write than get on the phone, you can send a note, question, or comment. The email address is feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, World Have Your Say from the BBC. And then at noon today, Philosophy Talk with John Perry and Ken Taylor. And this week, it's reincarnation, past lives, future selves.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will be focusing on the bottled water industry. It's a $110 billion industry. Arrowhead, Crystal Geyser, Dasani, and others sell water from California. What are your thoughts on that? And Americans, they bought 50 billion plastic water bottles last year. Unfortunately, 75% of those bottles are not recycled. So why do Americans buy so much bottled water? And what do you want to know about this multi-billion dollar industry? Today, we are talking about agriculture. 80% of the state's water is used by agriculture. 55% of that water goes to the meat and dairy industries. Individuals use about 4% of the state's water. So we're talking about big ag today with Heather Cooley, director of the Pacific Institute's water program, Professor Samuel Sandoval Solis, assistant in the Department of Land, Air, and Water Resources at UC Davis, and Dan Beard, former commissioner of the UC Bureau of Reclamations and author of the book Deadbeat Dams. Dan is out with a new piece, How to Save California Agriculture from Itself. And and if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Heather, what would you like to add to that question, just in terms of the differences between small farmers and the corporate farmers and how they use water?
Really important topic, in that we often talk about agriculture as if it's a one large monolith, but the reality is it's very diverse. And so there are corporate farmers in California, but there are a lot of small and medium-sized farmers as well. Generally, those farmers with more money, these larger corporate farmers, are able to dig deeper wells and pump groundwater from much greater depths. That can cause problems for those who have shallow wells. Those wells can go dry. And we have seen that in parts of the state, and that's a real problem. We need to ensure that our small and medium-sized farmers are helped in meeting the demands on water resources, and that they're able to implement some of these efficiency measures. That needs to be a focus of our efforts. But to get to your earlier point, you were talking about sort of what are some of the solutions, and I really look at it as sort of four parts. One is around restricting the amount of water that we're taking, so making sure we're not overpumping groundwater or taking too much out of our rivers and streams, and that's really the role of both state and local governments. Second is around pricing, and we talked a little bit about this. There was some talk about charging sort of a market price, and that can cause a challenge with water, and that water is a human right. And so, we need to ensure that there's an affordable amount of water, at least for people to drink and do basic activities. But there is a role here, and in particular, and I'm sure Dan could speak to this quite a bit, that one of the largest deliverers of water in California is the federal government through the Central Valley Project. And that was a project that was built starting in the late 1930s. There's a tremendous investment. And over time, the users of that water, most of which were agriculture, but also some municipalities, were supposed to repay that for that infrastructure. They have a deadline of 2030 for repayment, and that's a repayment without even interest. They're not on track for meeting that repayment. And so increasing water rates to at least ensure that we're able to repay those capital costs and the ongoing O&M costs would be a step in the right direction in terms of raising the price of water and promoting efficiency. In addition to pricing, there's a need for technical support so that some of these small and medium-sized farmers are able to make the transition towards more efficient management practices. And finally, incentives. We need to be incentivizing farmers, again, focusing in on the small and medium size to install more efficient irrigation systems. We also need to provide some incentives to modernize our water delivery systems in the state to ensure that farmers get the water they need on demand. We still have some very old irrigation delivery systems. Some of them aren't even lined. Some farmers are on a rotation where they're only able to get water every 2 or 3 weeks. And so they're not able to get it when the crop actually needs it, and that promotes inefficiency. So there's a role here in modernizing our irrigation systems and incentivizing farmers to adopt efficient practices.
And Dan, I'd like you to elaborate on some of those, but first off, what are your thoughts on how this issue is being framed? Because the guests on yesterday's show said a lot of politicians sort of blame it on the rain. It's not raining. Or when Governor Brown went to Tahoe and stood in a dry field and said this should be covered in snow, the guest said, you know, even if it started pouring, we would not be out of this mess. We really need policy changes. And in your piece, you write that the government has made the drought worse by pursuing policies for far too long that undervalue and waste the West's most precious resource.
Well, I did say that, and I stand by it. I think that the drought has been made worse. But one of the problems that we haven't even discussed here and even raised the issue of climate change, and that is that every expert knows that the water that will come in the future, even if we return to some a higher level of precipitation, is going to come in a different form going forward, and we are going to have to rethink our entire water delivery system. And I think that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, is that I think there are some fundamental shifts that we need to make. One is to price water at a higher level. The second is to eliminate the politics that pervade the present system to the extent that we can, and try to make more intelligent decisions with our allocation of scarce public resources. Heather mentioned the need to change many of our delivery systems. Many of our delivery systems are going to change, and they're going to change because of climate change. And we need to think intelligently about how we're going to do that.
How do you deal with the politics? Because Adam Scow of Food and Water Watch on yesterday's show said that Governor Brown recently got together with the Farm Bureau to go over talking points because agriculture and its 80% use of water is getting so much media attention.
You know, I've struggled with this for a long time, and the one thing that that I've learned after 40 years of working in water issues is those that control water love one thing more than anything, and that is they love to hide in the dark. They don't like the public to know what's really going on. Now, if I heard this phrase, "Well, that's awful complicated. You better leave it to us," one more time, I think I'd be nauseated. I get frustrated with it because, mm-hmm. frankly, the electorate is pretty intelligent on these issues. They know when somebody's blowing smoke. And at some point, the one thing that agriculture, I think, fears more than anything else is at some point, somebody's going to say, let's have a vote. Let's decide this by a plebiscite. And they're not going to like the answer that they get because, you know, the reality is there's more of us than there are of them. Hmm. So I think that the most important thing we can do, and Heather's group has done this, and I think Professor Solis and others at UC Davis have done it, is we get as much out in the way of facts on the table as we possibly can. Make people much more intelligent about how we develop water, how we move water, and how we use water. And I think an intelligent electorate, an intelligent public, is the one way we can begin to fight some of the politics of this. I also think that the state senators who wrote the letter, I think, have figured out the politics pretty quickly, and that is that they've called on the governor to backtrack, and so far he hasn't. But we'll see. It's early.
And Dan, what are your thoughts on the media focusing on specific crops and then, the meat and dairy industries, for example? So you've got a pound of beef requiring 1,800 to 2,000 gallons of water, a pound of chicken, 467. Almonds, as you know, is getting so much attention, one pound of of water per almond. And then alfalfa is now starting to get more attention. About 100 billion gallons of water per year is being exported in the form of alfalfa from California to feed animals in other countries. So
well, it should give our attention. These are decisions that are made ultimately by our government officials. You know, the ag districts and the federal government don't get the ability to use this water blindly. The state has made these decisions to allocate the water in this way. And I think that many of the allocation decisions they've made are wrong, and I think we need to correct them. It's complicated because of the legal system, but we can, you know, we can use taxes and other mechanisms to promote markets, water markets, and make other decisions about how we reallocate water to meet needs going forward. I think having increased scrutiny on what is done with our water is a positive development. I think that people ought to debate these issues. Does it make sense for us to effectively send California's water to Japan and China in the form of alfalfa? I don't know. To me, it's a legitimate public policy issue whether or not we should be doing that. I suppose if we all became vegans, we should get water use. But we'd probably grow, grapes and wine. But, I think that it's legitimate for us to debate and discuss these issues. And the more that's out in the public forum, the better off we are.
Sure, Heather.
So we've done some work here at the Pacific Institute looking at California's water footprint. And a water footprint looks at in terms of California's population, how much we consume in the forms of goods and services and where the water to produce those goods and services comes from. And what we found is that California is a net importer of water in that we are importing more water via goods and services than we are exporting. So I think that's an important sort of thing to keep in mind. Yes, some of the foods that we are producing is going to other places where it's being consumed. But here in California, we are importing goods and services as well. And in fact, we're importing more than we're exporting.
But that water is not coming from California.
No, but it's coming from other places, right? So it's coming from China. It's coming from other parts of the U.S., other parts of Mexico and Canada. It's coming from our major trading partners.
Well, and so what do you think, Heather, about groups that are trying to raise awareness about these issues, like the Factory Farming Coalition, raising awareness about California being home to 2 million dairy cows? It takes about 683 gallons of water to produce a gallon of milk. Or again, alfalfa, which is now finally getting more attention, 100 billion gallons of water is being exported in the form of alfalfa from California.
So I think that those are important parts of the discussion and parts of the education process. So, you know, if we look globally at water resources and we're talking about pressures on water resources, certainly one of the leading global pressures is not only population growth, but a shift to more of a meat-based diet.
Right.
And that's a global problem. Personally, I am a vegetarian. I have been for 23 years. Those are choices I make, not just based upon water, but on resources that are used and the resource requirements. But if we look at California today in response to this drought, all of us suddenly becoming vegetarians or becoming vegans is not going to have an impact today on California's drought. Those are sort of long-term challenges. Those are global challenges. I think education is a piece of that. People can make decisions based upon their values and their understanding of these issues. But it's not going to solve our problem today.
Do you think state government officials have the responsibility to educate the public about this? Because the Save Our Water website does not include any information about food. It's all about lawns and showers. And they say that that's just not their area, that they don't focus on food.
Well, I think you're seeing a lot of other NGOs in particular who are looking at sort of water footprint as a mechanism of education, and that's great. I mean, we can't just rely on government as part of our education. It needs to be from a diverse set of voices. I do think, though, that what the government can control is in and around some of the issues I talked about earlier, ensuring that we're not pumping too much water from our groundwater aquifers or taking too much water from rivers and streams. Ultimately, that is the role of local and state governments to control that. the issue of pricing, again, there's a role for the federal government and the state government in promoting that. You know, I agree with the governor in that we can't say this crop should be grown there and that crop should be grown in that location. That you start getting into dangerous territory and there can be unintended consequences, but we can ensure we have policies in place so that we have water today for humans, for ecosystems, and that we have sufficient water for future generations.
Professor Solis, before we get to calls, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, and basically, I mean, following on that, I agree with Heather and Dan in many things. One is that in terms of what are the things we as a consumers, every time that we go to the grocery or to our restaurants, we're influencing, I mean, the market, and in that case, eventually we'll come to what these farmers will grow and so on. The other part is taking our decision based on facts, on education, about our nutrition. I mean, if we are just trying to grow food for the sake of having food for all the people, that will not be a good solution. I mean, it's what we are not looking is for food, but for nutrition. And that is a larger conversation, a larger education task that we need to have. The other one, going back to what Dan is mentioning, I agree that some of the solutions not only go to having this, the system was thought for a reason that was done before. I mean, it was in the 1930s, 1940s, when they decided how to operate the system. We don't have the same hydrology. Our infrastructure is aging. Climate is changing. So we need to adjust to those. In some of those adjustments comes some of the politics, and also in some of those come actually how we have changed our societal values. We value now more the environment. So I think we need to change that. And the other solution that I've been thinking is also in agricultural systems. So basically having systems that can scale up and down, basically having permanent crops that can be, and that permanent or tree crops that will be there, and that farmers can have secure water for those, and then having some annual crops that can be expanded or cut back as water is available. For this, we are requesting farmers to be a little bit more knowledgeable, not only one crop, but in two or three crops, which that requires a higher sense of skills. But I mean, there are solutions. We can do it. We can balance our checkbook. We can the water that we have available, we will be able to manage it to grow food and hopefully to provide nutrition for all the Californians.
Go ahead, Dan.
I must say that I'm surprised at the drift of our conversation. It's not a criticism against any of the guests. But, you know, the drift of this conversation is we're giving agriculture a pass. This is 2% of our economy, California's economy, or some such statistic. And yet it's the vast majority of the consumptive use of water in California. And Governor Brown is going around making excuses for agriculture and trying his best not to, not to have them make tough decisions. Yes, they're getting less water, but the reality is that the citizens across the state of California are being asked to pay the price and bear the brunt of some of the most difficult allocation decisions here. The government allocates the water. It's not a market system in reality. It's reminiscent of the Soviet economy. You know, a bunch of bureaucrats at the State Water Resources Control Boards are the ones that hand out all the water rights, and they handed out far too many to in the wrong places, and Professor Solis is absolutely right. We need to change that in some way. But I just don't think we should be giving agriculture a pass in these drought conditions. I think they have to step up and bear the brunt of solving these problems just as much as everybody else in California.
Well, and as you say, Dan, so many people repeat the line that this is very complex and complicated. The system is so globalized at this point. Even if everybody stops eating meat in California, it's going to be sent overseas, and they put their hands up in the air. And you're right, though. I mean, even some of our guests off the record during our last week-long series were hesitant to really take on ag directly. So, you know, how do you start that conversation when the governor's not touching on this?
Well, I think we do it right now. I mean, the fact that that's one of the reasons I wrote the book. I wanted to say things that weren't popular, that people kept pulling their punches and never really address those kinds of issues. I think we talk about those kinds of issues now. And frankly, that's why the drought has, at least there's a positive side to the drought, in that we're beginning to openly discuss, you know, how much water is allocated to agriculture and their use of that water, in addition to how much is allocated for cities and towns across the state of California and how they're using that water as well. I think it's a great discussion. Heather's group has done some remarkable work over the years about, you know, how water is used in California, the water footprint, and how much energy it takes to move, to develop and move water throughout the state. But, you know, we've learned more in the last 2 or 3 weeks. We've impacted more people, reached more people than and a lot of us that have been harping on this stuff for 10 or 15 years. So there is a positive side to this.
Yeah, just to add on that, I mean, there are, you know, many of us who have been working on water issues for a long time, and the drought is really providing an opportunity and shining a light on what we know are the perennial deficiencies in water management in California. So this is, I think, a real opportunity to talk about agriculture and agricultural water use in California. You know, we talked a little bit about the diversity in corporate versus sort of small ag, large ag and small ag, but there's also a lot of diversity in terms of the degree to which farmers are implementing efficiency measures. We have some very smart, innovative farmers in California who are really pushing the limits around how they grow food. And that is, of course, important for California, but also for food security globally. But not everyone's there yet. We still have farmers that are using flood irrigation, where water is underpriced, and they're using large volumes of water in ways that are not efficient. That not only puts pressure on our rivers and streams and our groundwater, but it also can create water quality issues. You know, of course, as with water, you're applying fertilizers, and if you're applying too much water, then you're leaching that into rivers and streams and groundwater aquifers as well. So, you know, this is an important conversation. There's a lot of great work that's happening on the ground in California in the agricultural community, and now we need to talk about how do we expand it, how do we scale that up so that all of that California agriculture is as efficient as can be.
And the other problem is that the solutions are often missing, or people, because the system is convoluted, the solutions can also come across that way. But Dan, I mean, when you talk to people about these issues and you talk about raising prices, okay, that one's easy to grasp. What other solutions would you like to see specifically on agriculture?
Well, I think that one of the things we need to do is to spend our money differently. And I think we ought to take how we spend money on water programs, particularly at the federal level, out of the hands of the Congress, and we ought to put it in the hands of an independent commission along the lines that has been used for the Base Realignment and Closure Commission. So I think the other thing is the more knowledgeable the average citizen becomes, and the more that those of us that have worked in this field can simplify it for people and present it as a factual situation and not cloud it up with a lot of wonkish talk. People are smart. They understand. They can figure this out. I'm pretty confident in the ability of people to see clearly what is really going on here. And I think that's what came through with the governor's refusal to include agriculture. The average citizen sort of stood up and said, "What? You know, I've got to reduce my use of water, but big agriculture doesn't." I think people see right through that in a minute. And so I think the most important thing we can do is make water a valuable commodity, which it is. You know, you're going to have a show tomorrow to talk about the bottled water industry. 25 years ago, the bottled water industry didn't exist. Today, it's one of the, you know, it's the most profitable product that Pepsi and Coca-Cola put out on the market. I don't know what the $15 or $17 billion at the wholesale market industry. It shows how valuable water is.
Right.
And we're wandering around, in many cases, giving water away to agricultural users who are not using it effectively or wisely.
Heather, what would you add to that? We've got about a minute left.
Well, you know, I think we talked a lot about sort of, ensuring we're not taking too much water and pricing it appropriately. But I also think there's a role for, as I mentioned, modernizing the delivery systems and providing incentives so that farmers do transition away from the inefficient flood irrigation towards drip irrigation and towards irrigation scheduling. So there's a lot of potential on the ground to be using water more effectively and more efficiently so that we can have a healthy agricultural sector in California as well as vibrant urban areas and healthy ecosystems.
And Professor Solis, final thoughts?
Yeah, I think that agriculture is also part of the solution. And part of the solution is, as we talked, do some of these water budgets, increase the recharge in these areas through intentional groundwater recharge, modifying the way that we operate the system. It's no longer how we're operating. It does no longer match the reality. And the other part that I agree with Dan, we need to provide more education to convey the message that, I mean, it might be complicated, but we find there are some solutions on the table and that we need to communicate these solutions.
And Dan, you used to work in government in the first Bill Clinton administration. Are you in touch with any of the state senators in California about these issues?
Yes, I have been.
And what are your thoughts on what they've done so far? I mean, they just wrote this letter to Governor Brown.
Well, I don't think, they haven't taken final actions yet. I think they saw very quickly the public reaction to the governor's announcement. They rightfully sent him a letter, and I think that this is just the first of many steps that we'll see from elected political leaders in California on the issue.
And just briefly, as a former government official, what is the best way for people to raise their voices on this?
Speak out as much and as often as you possibly can. Social media presents a great opportunity for us to speak out. But I also think programs such as yours and others present a great opportunity. I think once politicians are great. They love.
Dan Beard is commissioner of the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, or was, in the first Bill Clinton administration, author of Deadbeat Dams. Heather Cooley is director of the Pacific Institute's Water Program. And Samuel Sandoval Solis is professor at UC Davis. Thank you all for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. Why are bottled water companies allowed to take water from drought-ridden California? On the next Shore Call, we continue our week-long series on California's water crisis by talking about the $110 billion bottled water industry. Arrowhead, Crystal Geyser, and others sell water from California. Americans bought 50 billion plastic water bottles last year. So why do so many Americans buy bottled water? And what do you want to know about this multi-billion-dollar industry? It's Shore Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and here.